Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, February 7th, 2025. We turn first to page one, where the main story is headlined, Protest, a Mix of Anger and Hope. Marchers support immigrants, slam Trump, tell their stories. This story is datelined Normal. They marched with signs reading things like, No hate, no fear. Immigrants are welcome, and in Spanish, my parents work harder than your president. Nearly 130 students and supporters at Illinois State University marched from Uptown Circle and took over the Quad midday Wednesday to protest the Trump administration's immigration crackdown and escalated immigration enforcement across the country by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The protests resumed at noon Thursday and wrapped up before 2 p.m. I am one of the students that are affected from this. I came with my family when I was 3 years old to the U.S., said one student on Wednesday, asking to be identified only by her initials, MN, for her safety. These people who are protesting make me feel secure and at home because I know, even though they don't have the same situation as me or the same story, they are still standing next to me and screaming the same words as I am, MN said. Even though Illinois' Trust Act prohibits state and local law enforcement from helping ICE enforce civil immigration requirements, marches like the ones this week show solidarity with migrants who do not have that protection, said 20-year-old David Anthony Herrera, one of the protest organizers. We are trying to fight for people who don't have the privilege to be in a state like we do. So we have to use our voices, our resources, our campus, to be able to speak for those who cannot, Herrera said. Herrera's parents are migrants from Mexico. He is studying Spanish at ISU. While the crowd mostly consisted of people from a Hispanic or Latin background, there were people from other ethnicities and backgrounds present as well, something that Herrera finds necessary. The diverse group of people, by its nature, is the marginalized group, so we all have to stick up with each other, like to fight against the things that we are so deprived of, he said. 1 week before Wednesday's protest, Charlotte Alvarez, executive director of the Immigration Project in Bloomington Normal, sat for an interview with Lee Enterprises. Alvarez graduated from Harvard University in 2012 with a degree in immigration law. While there are a few avenues for people seeking U.S. citizenship, the process of seeking legal asylum can be quite lengthy, 8 to 10 years, she said. The U.S. government immediately puts them in contact with ICE and into removal proceedings, so there is a deportation case started against that person. That is the goal of that case, is to determine, can they stay? Do they have a legal right to remain, or are they going to be deported, Alvarez said. Those courts, though, are so overwhelmed that the wait time for an initial hearing before an immigration judge can take 3 to 4 years, she said. Another pathway to legal citizenship is through a qualifying relationship with a sibling, Alvarez explained. For example, if I am a U.S. citizen and I want to petition my brother from Mexico, who was born there, there's a category for that, she said. But the wait list is 150 years long. Only a set amount of those visas can be awarded at a time, and since those seeking that type of visa are so numerous, anyone applying for a new one would die before receiving it, Alvarez said. The complicated and long, often impossible legal process leaves migrants feeling frustrated. The process takes so much time and money, it makes it almost impossible for people to come here the right way, said Leah Gutierrez, a 19-year-old sophomore from Peoria studying publishing and mass media at ISU. Most migrants are only seeking steady work and opportunities to provide for their families, said 19-year-old Gabrielle Scheidez, a sophomore from Chicago who is studying finance and said he has many family members navigating the immigration process. We're here to make a better life, better lives for ourselves. And we're over here being kind of like badmouthed for just doing something that we believe in, he said. Sometimes, for whatever reason, the legal process takes too long, he said. Some people don't have 10 years, he said, about the lengthy immigration process. Some people just don't have 10 years. In his first public address to the nation in January 2015, when he first announced his candidacy for president, Donald Trump disparaged migrants from Central and South America, specifically Mexico. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they are rapists, and some, I assume, are good people, he said a decade ago. We are not murderers or rapists. We are students. We are future leaders. We are future doctors, future nurses, said MN. We want that future. We want, like, don't deport our potential. That future, though, seems farther away than ever for Gutierrez. A lot of families have come here for the so-said American dream, she said Wednesday. I mean, personally, in my 19 years here, I haven't really seen an American dream. As time goes on, I think hatred has become more widespread and has had us more divided than ever. Trump recently signed an executive order attempting to undo birthright citizenship for migrants without proper documentation, an effort that was blocked for a second time Wednesday by a U.S. district judge in Maryland because it violates the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment, according to The Hill. Trump's continued efforts to overturn settled precedent is fueling anger among children of migrants. I think it's absolutely atrocious, Gutierrez said. I'm a citizen thanks to birthright citizenship, and I think it's in the amendment. The renewed push for sweeping immigration reform, enforcement, and deportations is affecting student success more so than the first Trump presidency. I remember when he took office in 2017, when I was in middle school, it just felt like the whole world changed, MN said. Still, despite the fears a second Trump presidency has brought, the turnout for protests fosters a sense of optimism for students like Shidez. I am hopeful seeing how many people can come out today, he said. And our next front page story is also about immigration, headlined, Feds sue over sanctuary policies. Obstruction of ICE by Illinois, Chicago, and Cook County alleged. This story is datelined Springfield. The Trump administration on Thursday sued Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, and Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle, alleging that state and local sanctuary policies were obstructing the federal government's crackdown on illegal immigration. The lawsuit, filed in U.S. District Court in Chicago, claims that the policies have the purpose and effect of making it more difficult for and deliberately impeding federal immigration officers' ability to carry out their responsibilities in those jurisdictions. The federal government is seeking to have the Illinois Trust Act and the city and county sanctuary ordinances invalidated under the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Trump has often singled out Chicago and Illinois, which have some of the nation's strongest protections for immigrants. Top administration officials last month visited the city to launch stepped-up immigration enforcement and showcased footage of Border Czar Tom Homan making arrests on live television. The aggressive approach and harsh rhetoric have been heavily criticized for stoking fears in immigrant communities and feeding false claims about crime among immigrants. Pritzker spokesman Matt Hill said the state will defend the law in court. Unlike Donald Trump, Illinois follows the law, Hill said. The bipartisan Illinois Trust Act, signed into law by a Republican governor, has always been compliant with federal law and still is today. Illinois will defend our laws that prioritize police resources for fighting crime while enabling state law enforcement to assist with arresting violent criminals. Instead of working with us to support law enforcement, the Trump administration is making it more difficult to protect the public, just like they did when Trump pardoned the convicted January 6th violent criminals, he said. We look forward to seeing them in court. The Trust Act was signed by then-Governor Bruce Rauner, a Republican, in 2017. It generally prohibits state and local law enforcement from assisting the federal government with civil immigration enforcement. Cooperation is permitted, however, when there is a federal criminal warrant. Chicago has had sanctuary city status since 1985, though the interpretation of the ordinance has changed over the years. The state and federal policies are meant to foster trust between immigrant communities and law enforcement by ensuring that interactions do not result in immigration detention or deportation. However, the laws have long been the subject of ridicule among conservatives and immigration hawks who claim that it impedes federal officials from doing their jobs. There have been various proposals from Republican state lawmakers over the years to curtail or fully repeal the state law. Legislation introduced last month would amend the law to allow state and local law enforcement agencies to cooperate with ICE if an undocumented person is charged with or convicted of a felony. It would also require a state or local law enforcement agency to notify ICE when they have an undocumented person in custody. The proposals, however, have never gotten far in the Democrat-dominated legislature. In a statement, Illinois Senate Republican leader John Curran, Republican of Downers Grove, accused Pritzker and Johnson of putting both law enforcement and Illinoisans at risk under the state's existing laws. Their continued refusal to put the safety of Illinois citizens before their own personal political agendas has now forced the federal government to intervene to keep Americans safe, Curran said, before encouraging Democrats to put a Trust Act repeal up for a vote. Hours after new U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi was sworn in Wednesday, she launched the administration's latest salvo against sanctuary cities, ordering an end to Department of Justice grants for jurisdictions that unlawfully interfere with the federal law enforcement. Courts, however, have repeatedly upheld the legality of the range of sanctuary laws. And the Associated Press contributed to this report. And our last front page story is about the U.S. government, titled USAID Has Big Impact Across the Globe. This is an Associated Press story. The Trump administration's decision to close the U.S. Agency for International Development has drawn widespread criticism from congressional Democrats and raised questions and concern about the influence billionaire ally Elon Musk wields over the federal government. The United States is by far the world's largest source of foreign assistance, although several European countries allocate a much bigger share of their budgets to aid. USAID funds projects in some 120 countries aimed at fighting epidemics, educating children, providing clean water, and supporting other areas of development. Here is a look at USAID's impact around the world. In South America, USAID has been critical in providing humanitarian assistance in Colombia, conservation efforts in the Brazilian Amazon, and coca eradication in Peru. Recent USAID money also supported emergency humanitarian aid to more than 2.8 million Venezuelans who fled economic crisis. In 2024 alone, the agency transferred about $45 million to the UN World Food Program, mostly to assist Venezuelans. In Brazil, USAID's largest initiative is the Partnership for the Conservation of Amazon Biodiversity, which focuses on conservation and improving livelihoods for indigenous peoples and other rainforest communities. Over in Peru, part of USAID's $135 million funding in 2024 was dedicated to financing cocaine production alternatives such as coffee and cacao, The humanitarian agency has been seeking to curb production of the drug since the early 1980s. In Africa, last year the U.S. gave the sub-Saharan region more than $6.5 billion in humanitarian assistance. But since Trump's announcement, HIV patients in Africa found locked doors at clinics funded by an acclaimed U.S. program that helped rein in the global AIDS epidemic. Known as one of the world's most successful foreign aid programs, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, has been credited with saving more than 25 million lives, largely in Africa. "The world is baffled," said the health minister of South Africa, the country with the most people living with HIV, after the U.S. freeze on aid. He says the U.S. funds almost 20% of the $2.3 billion needed each year to run South Africa's HIV/AIDS program through PEPFAR, and now the biggest response to a single disease in history is under threat. The effects of halting U.S. aid also rippled across sub-Saharan Africa. In Ghana, the Chemonics International Development Group said it is pulling logistics for programs in maternal and child health, malaria response, and HIV. Education programs were halted in Mali, a conflict-battered West African nation where USAID has become the country's main humanitarian partner after others left following a 2021 coup. And in civil war-torn Sudan, which is grappling with cholera, malaria, and measles, the aid freeze means 600,000 people will be at risk for catching and spreading those diseases, said an official who spoke on condition of anonymity. In Syria, Doctors of the World Turkey says it was forced to lay off 300 staff and shutter 12 field hospitals it runs across northern Syria, a region devastated by years of war and a huge 2023 earthquake. Hakan Bilgin, the organization's president, said it relies on USAID for 60% of its funding and has had to cut its daily consultations from 5,000 to 500. As a medical organization providing life-saving services, you're basically saying, close all the clinics, stop all your doctors, and you're not providing services to women, children, and the elderly, Bilgin said. In the Balkans to Uganda. In Kosovo, which has received more than $1 billion from USAID since 1999, women's groups fear the impact of losing American funding for gender and diversity-related projects in the conservative country. A nonprofit organization supporting LGBTQ people in Uganda also feels under threat. Pius Kennedy, a program officer with the Kampala-based nonprofit Africa Queer Network, said he and five other permanent employees were ordered by USAID to stop work. In Myanmar and Cambodia, the freeze of foreign assistance from USAID includes $39 million for rights, democracy, and media in Myanmar, whose military seized power from the elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi in 2021, a human rights group said Thursday. The U.S. has also frozen funding for landmine removal in Cambodia. In an illustration of the geopolitics of foreign aid, China has stepped in to fill the gap. Beijing and Washington vie for influence in Southeast Asia, with China gaining ground in the past decade. In Mexico, in the southern Mexican city of Villahermosa, the peace oasis of the Holy Spirit Amparito Shelter is one of several beneficiaries of U.S. humanitarian assistance to those fleeing persecution, crisis, or violence. However, under the funding freeze, the charitable organization that runs the shelter had to cut its only doctor, as well as a social worker and child psychologist. "The crisis is only going to worsen," the shelter said in a statement. "The most affected will be the population we serve." And in Ukraine, U.S. funding has helped to pay for fuel for evacuation vehicles salaries for aid workers, legal and psychological support, and tickets to help evacuees reach safer locations. That includes the cost of using a concert hall in eastern Ukraine as a temporary center for civilians fleeing the relentless Russian bombardment. That shelter is now in peril because 60% of the costs, equivalent of $7,000 a month to run, were being covered by the U.S. And we turn now to some local and state news. This story is headlined, "Demonstrators and Lawmakers at State Capitol Decry Trump." This story is Dateline Springfield. More than 100 protesters demonstrating outside the Illinois Capitol and Democratic state legislators within it on Wednesday vowed to resist the policies of President Donald Trump's administration and speak out against fascism. The demonstrators gathered near the Abraham Lincoln statue in front of the State House on a cloudy, damp day in Illinois' capital city, joined thousands across the nation to protest the Trump administration's early actions, decrying everything from the president's immigration crackdown to his rollback of transgender rights and a proposal to forcibly transfer Palestinians from the Gaza Strip. Later in the day, the supermajority Democrats in the Illinois House passed a series of resolutions condemning Trump's early actions, performative gestures intended to respond to weeks of floor speeches by some House Republicans and to perhaps fire up dejected Democratic supporters. While Governor J.B. Pritzker has been among the most forceful Democrats in pushing back against some of the early actions of Trump's second term, many party leaders have struggled to find their footing following Trump's return to power, which has also left many of the Democratic Party's backers despondent. "Sometimes it feels like there's very little we can do," said State Representative Sharon Chung, Democrat of Bloomington, "but with this, we are taking a very unified stand." The protest earlier in the day was part of the 50501 movement, which stands for 50 protests in 50 states on one day, February 5th. It was organized online. The demonstrations in their sheer numbers were a far cry from the millions who lined the streets of Washington, D.C. and cities around the country to protest Trump on his first full day of office in 2017. But what they lacked in numbers, they made up for in their urgency to confront what many perceive to be a dangerous time in the country's history. "We have to oppose the fascist takeover of the country, the destruction of the Constitution," said Tim O'Connor of Decatur. Protesters waved signs of various political messages, including "trans rights are human rights," "feed the poor, eat the rich," and "stop white nationalism." One sign even depicted President Trump and Elon Musk with swastikas on their heads. Paige Johnson of Mascouda was advocating for those close to her. "I have lots of friends and family that are both women and part of the LGBTQ community, and I love them very, very much, and I want to make sure that they get to keep their rights," Johnson said. Meanwhile, inside the Illinois Capitol, the supermajority Democrats who control the Illinois House formally condemned some of Trump's early actions through a series of resolutions. They included measures condemning Trump's pardons of those convicted of crimes related to the storming of the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, and his now-blocked executive order freezing federal grant funds. They also condemned Trump's efforts to dismantle diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives and his administration's immigration enforcement actions. Another resolution called for Trump to drop plans for tariffs on Canada and Mexico, which were paused earlier this week for 30 days. The measures were performative, essentially amounting to strongly expressed opinions that hold no weight beyond that. Democrats said the collective action was a response to speeches some members of the superminority House GOP caucus have given in the weeks since Trump's second inauguration. As votes began on the resolutions, House Republicans walked off the floor in protest. At a hastily called press conference Wednesday evening, House GOP leader Tony Macomb, Republican of Savannah, said her caucus stood together for working families across Illinois and against the petty political games of the majority party, accusing the Democrats of grandstanding. House Republicans are here to work, not to waste time on political theater, she said. House Speaker Chris Welch, Democrat of Hillside, criticized Republicans for their walk-off, saying they could not stay and do their jobs and speak out against fascism. What's coming out of Washington, D.C. can be summed up in one word, fascism. Fascism. Fascism, Welch said. They should be here to speak out against fascism. We cannot be silent. We must rise up, speak out. We cannot walk out on the people that sent us here. McCombe called Welch's remarks unhinged grandstanding and a distraction from the issues facing the state. If Speaker Welch needs ideas on how to serve Illinois families, House Republicans have solutions to get the job done, she said. Republicans declined to address the substance of the resolutions, and Illinois lawmakers will return to Springfield in 2 weeks when Pritzker will deliver his annual budget address. And this news brief says Heartland Bank and Trust Company is planning to build a new branch to replace its existing facility at 818 Woodlawn Road in Lincoln. According to the announcement from the bank, the decision to build a new facility was because of the bank's ongoing commitment to the Lincoln community and the need for a more efficient and accessible space. The current bank has served the area since 1979. Lance Carter, president and CEO of Heartland Bank, said the bank's commitment to the Lincoln community remains strong. Our new Woodlawn branch reflects our dedication to providing exceptional service and supporting the area's growth, Carter said. We look forward to building long-term relationships with our customers in this updated space. The new full-service bank is designed to meet the changing needs of its customers and is expected to open in fall 2025. Heartland Bank is based in Bloomington and has branches throughout Illinois and eastern Iowa. For more information, visit hbtbank.com. And ISU announces Econ Challenge. Illinois State University is inviting high school and college students to put their minds to the test at an economics competition. A statement from the Department of Economics at ISU said competitors will tackle real challenges, present thoughtful solutions, and gain practical experiences by getting a glimpse into the work of professional economists. The theme for high school students is Barriers to Small Business Success in Illinois. For college students, it's Racial Opportunity Gap in the U.S. Attendees may enter as teams or individuals. Students are asked to submit a research-based podcast script for review by ISU economics faculty. Top teens will be invited to the Redbird campus to present their findings in mid-April. Prizes include a monetary award and recognition at an awards ceremony. Registration is due by February 17th and the final submission deadline by March 31st. For more information, go to the competition website or you can email ISU Economics Advisor Grace Steinke. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part one of the Pantograph of Friday, February 7th, 2025. I look forward to reading part two with you next.